After winning the 1993 Bob Hope Chrysler Classic, Tom Kite attributed his impressive play over the last year to confidence. "It's just confidence in my game, a little bit of maturing. Now, when I look at the guys around me, there's not many I say, boy, that guy's better than I am." Failure focus. Even world-class players have periods of poor performance that deplete their confidence in one part of their game, often putting. Ray Floyd finished third in a field of four greats that included Chichi Rodriguez, Arnold Palmer, and Jack Nicklaus at the 1993 Senior Skins game. Floyd won $60,000 with birdies at the first, fourth, and sixth holes. And then his putting went sour and he was shut out over the last 14 holes. There were two playoff holes in this. And this is his quote, "I just lost confidence in my putter. When you miss a few, it gets into your mind." In 1986, Lee Trevino said of Bob Tway, "If you're looking for the next superstar, there he is. That guy can golf his ball." In 1993, Golf Digest's Michael Bamberger interviewed Bob Tway during the Colonial, a Texas PGA Tour stop. He had missed seven cuts in a row, shooting two rounds of 81 and four rounds in the high 70s. His last win was the Las Vegas Invitational in 1990. He finished 179th on the PGA money list for 1992. Tway spoke candidly about his slide from the top. "The problems started off mechanical and then they got mental. I started driving the ball bad, and then I reached a point where I'd get to a tee and say, where's this one gonna go? My confidence level changed." When you're playing good, you have a lot of inner calmness. Your mind is working very, very slowly. "When I'm feeling confident, everything is so slow." When you're playing poorly, your mind is bombarded with thoughts. Bob Tway didn't like the way his swing felt after a successful year in 1986. Sound familiar? Recall Sandy Lyle, David Frost, and Greg Norman. So, Tway turned to mechanics and began to make changes. He had a handsy but rhythmic hook swing, the swing that won the PGA Championship. His thoughts the year following his PGA Championship win are interesting. Your expectations change. So you go out the next year and kind of expect to keep playing that way. What you don't realize is that everything was going very good for you to do that. So when things aren't going that way, it's like, what's wrong? How come I can't keep doing what I did before? Our expectations and the level of play, it's not reality. Reality is to keep plugging along. Tway worked on mechanics and began to show improvement. Instructor David Ledbetter summarized plays Twight. "Technically, he has a better swing now than he did in 1986. But in tournaments, it's almost as if he has the yips with a driver. Make good swings on the practice tee, but that doesn't mean diddly when you have no confidence." In the end, Tway returned to the feel that won the 1986 PGA Championship, his old swing. Tway made a significant breakthrough when he won the MCI Classic in April of 1995 in a three-way playoff with David Frost and Nolan Hinkey. He commented that the win was a boost to his confidence. In spite of the slow climb back to the top Bob Tway experienced before his win, his comments reflected interesting insight during his struggle. Let's say your confidence is low, but your ball striking is starting to get better. Your mind hasn't caught up to your ball striking. You've got to hit more good shots to get those bad shots out of your mind. "I've actually been hitting the ball better lately, but I'm not as comfortable and as relaxed as I should be because I still have a lot of memory of hitting crummy shots." You've got to hit a lot of good shots in competition until you can get relaxed. I can't really brainwash myself and say, okay, you're going to hit good shots. People say, relax, let it go. It's easy to let it go when it's going good, but if a couple of shots go right and a couple left, it's not so easy. The brain research discussed in the chapter on visualization suggests that a focus on an image of poor shots lights up the brain in areas to produce that same poor performance. Johnny Miller reflected on Tway's swing changes. "When I think of Tway, I think of one piece of advice I'd give every serious golfer. Use your own darn swing and tell everyone else to shove it. Tell them to keep their swing thoughts to themselves. Why? Because more players get ruined by trying to improve their swings instead of just going with the swing that won them all those junior and college tournaments." Expectancy also played a role in Tway's dilemma. European and US PGA Tours players Seve Ballesteros has won 18 straight years on the European Tour. He is well known for hitting tee shots everywhere and still making birdies and pars from the rough, from behind trees, out of bunkers, and even from an occasional parking lot. Ballesteros expects to hit some tee shots sideways. Then he finds his ball and the next target. During his search for the perfect swing, Tway expected to hit his tee shots in the fairway. When he didn't, he described a loss of confidence and poor play. The majority of you likely take your good shots for granted and direct most of your attention to your poor performance. What do you think after a round? Do you think about the great drives, fairway shots, chips, and putts? Or do you think about the bad breaks and the hooks and slices, or shots into the hazard? The following is a list of pre-swing and post-swing statements that will deplete your confidence, cause you to be distracted, frustrated, and angry, increase tension, promote bad swing mechanics, and create poor performance. This is the pre-swing. Again, these will deplete your confidence. I can't. This is a big carry. I wonder if this is enough club. I need this. I have to. I'm playing over my head. All right, keep your head down, straight left arm, and don't look up. If I go par par, this will be my best score ever. Oh no, don't hit it left. I hate this hole, this shot, this club. I may as well kick it. I can't putt. Don't be short, don't be long. The last time I had this shot, I hit it dead left or dead right, and so on. The hazards are short left and long right. These are post-swing comments that will deplete your confidence. What's wrong with you? These lessons haven't helped. That stinks. I may as well give this game up. That was awful. Stupid. You suck. Why don't you think, you idiot? You, and you can add the superlatives and the profanity to that statement. You should play left-handed. You belong on the red tees. Your mother's better than you are. If you could putt, that would only leave woods and irons to work on. That was a 300-yard drive, 200 yards up and 100 yards out. Post-swing steam. Now, there is a difference between being complacent with poor performance and self-critical, as in the previous examples. Sam Snead referred to it as letting off steam, while at the same time knowing when to shut off the steam valve. However, he did not endorse verbally beating yourself up. Great players intuitively know that a self-critical posture will deplete their confidence, and indifference takes them nowhere. Regarding indifference, Sam said, "Show me the fellow who walks along calmly after topping a drive or missing a kick-in putt, showing the world he is in perfect control, yet burning up inside, and I'll show you one who's going to lose." Similarly, Lee Trevino described the close of 1992 and his depleted confidence. "I had no confidence. It's not easy walking around with spring in your legs when you're making bogeys. I want to win. I've got a lot of killer instinct in me, and if people expect me to jump up and down when I'm shooting 75, well, that just isn't me. You show me a guy who smiles when he's shooting 75, and I'll show you a guy who's broke." There's a fine line to walk in learning to be self-supporting in your internal dialogue, while at the same time learning to quickly vent frustration. Determine how much venting of frustration improves your play and how much causes a deterioration in performance. It varies from one player to another. The content of the venting is also important. If your comments are punishing, your confidence will be drained. This is a good time to recall Walter Hagen's strategy for dealing with poor play. Remember, Hagen expected to hit 7 bad shots around. When he hit a bad shot, it was just one of the 7. Walter Hagen was one of the greatest players to play the game. How many bad shots around should you expect? Some of you may see Hagen's style as indifferent. It was, but it doesn't mean he didn't care. He knew what getting upset can do to score. In addition to Hagen's style, you can also learn to be a good internal coach. Be a good motivator. For example, you might say, "Come on, you can play better than this. Get focused. You're much better than you are playing." This internal dialogue is not self-punishing. It's being an internal motivator, a good coach. The emotional states of anxiety and anger are incompatible. Similarly, this good coach internal dialogue will help override any anxiety you might experience with poor play. Just keep that supportive, no-nonsense, aggressive dialogue going. Be patient. The chapter titled Lift Clean in Place, Applying What You've Learned, provides several examples of how to redirect your internal dialogue to improve performance. Now, I'm going to refer back to one of Sam Snead's comments that says it all. "Whenever I've been able to pull myself out of a slump, it's because I didn't forget that breaks always even out over the long pull, and that the bane of golf and life in general is to remember your mistakes and not your right moves. In clubhouses, you'll see men sitting around complaining, going over their bad shots. They should think back to their good shots, then try to repeat them. This is the only way to build that feeling called confidence. You can build it or tear yourself down. The choice is up to every individual. If you know yourself to be a whiner, you'll never play up to your full ability. It takes guts to be an optimist in golf. He who thinks like a winner will win. Remember, we recall things to which we attach emotion. Review your good and great shots following a round and attach emotions to those shots, not your poor shots. It is important to remember that your nervous system is storing experiences with every event and golf swing you make. If you are negative and focus on your mistakes, your confidence will be low. You don't have to get overly excited with good shots. Just note them and focus on them immediately following the shot and after your round. You will build confidence in small steps. The first step is beginning to listen to your thinking and how you talk to yourself both on and off the golf course. If you are negative and self-punishing off the course, you will be negative and self-punishing on the course. I have a standing rule for students attending our golf schools at Pelican Hill Golf Club and Resort at Newport Coast, California. If you call yourself a name on the range or during play, that becomes your name for the remainder of the school. We've had some interesting people come through our schools. Oh God, No joined me on the first tee one weekend, and Jesus Christ picked up our group on the 12th hole. You Stupid So-and-So, and I'll let you fill in the blank, usually attends a school once a month. The next time you tee it up with your foursome, adopt the mine under par rule. If you call yourself a name, it becomes your name for the remainder of the round. This rule will help you become more aware of your verbal self-abuse and add a little humor to your round. Strategies for a success focus. Let's look again at several ways you can begin to make changes. Pick out what was right about a shot. Don't take anything for granted. For example, you might say, felt solid, tempo was good. It was online. Good distance feel. That was a right club selection. I am mindful and focused in the present. My routine is becoming more and more automatic. I am feeling more relaxed with deep breathing and quieted movement. I'm playing one shot at a time and think about score only after the round. I'm being patient and mentally tough. I'm managing my anger. I'm really into my targets. I'm seeing every shot, even able to recall similar shots I've hit well and use that ball flight memory for visualization. I play so much better when I'm able to see what kind of shot I want to hit. That really helps me stay narrowly focused. Pick out what is right about off-course behavior. For example, you might say, my intent was good. I gave 100%. I did what I felt was right. I did a good job. I'm being more positive and I feel better about me and life. Being more positive makes errors less emotional and easier to correct. I'm being more assertive and I am free of a lot of my distressing thinking. Being positive and complimenting others makes me and them feel good. When I eliminate negativity about others, I feel better about them and myself. I like myself. I'm good at this. That's a big positive change for me. I feel relaxed. I feel good. This stuff really works. Now, develop written reminders or cues to keep a positive focus and record these thoughts in a daily diary. Talk regularly to someone close to you about your goals and review them regularly. Write down your successes. I ask the players I work with to write down what they did well after each round. They use this as a daily journal. Practice to build confidence. PGA Tour champion Gary Player established practice goals that required a specific performance before he discontinued practice. He described some of these practice routines in a 1967 book, and I quote, I wouldn't leave that bunker until I'd hold five shots. I'd just stay there until I'd done it, even if it took 2 or 3 hours. I had my own private self-imposed goals. I had to chip five into the hole before I'd quit. Player also says, if you think, I'm going to get this chip close enough for one putt, it's the wrong attitude. He says you should focus on holding out every shot. Nothing will build your confidence faster than successful performance, especially if you will focus your attention on your successes. Now, there are a number of strategies you can use to focus on success while practicing. Set specific, measurable practice goals. Be sure you can succeed at the first level. Once you succeed, gradually increase the difficulty level. The goals of the tour player and low handicappers are going to be much higher than the 15 index player. The tour player who holds out bunker shots and chips in from the fringe will have goals to hold a set number of shots before moving to the next drill. The following are a list of successive approximations for practicing shots from greenside sand bunkers for the higher index player. Regardless what your playing level is, adopt the same strategy of setting goals. A. Get 5 of 10 shots out of a practice bunker. B. Get 7 of 10 shots out of a practice bunker. C. Get 9 of 10 shots out of a practice bunker. And D. Get 10 of 10 shots out of a practice bunker. E. Get 5 of 10 shots within 10 feet of the hole. F. Get 7 of 10 shots within 10 feet of the hole. Now, your entry level may be at step F for this drill, or you may enter at 10 of 10 within 5 feet of the hole. You can always get closer. Finally, you'll be holing out 1 of 10 and so on. As noted, the tour player will set goals for holing shots. You must, however, set realistic goals. Realistic starting goals simply mean you are capable of having success relatively quickly. If during your practice session you go from B, which is 7 out of 10 shots out of the practice bunker, to C, and don't have success, one of two things has happened. Number one, the step between B and C is too big and you need to break down the step further. B and C is 7 out of 10 versus 9 out of 10, which means that you may need to just go back to 8 out of 10 between B and C. Or number two, you have reached your maximum performance capability. Now, if you've reached your maximum performance capability, it's time for a lesson. In fact, it's a good idea to have a lesson on putting, chipping, and bunker shots, and so on, before you set practice goals. There's no substitute for good technique, especially with trouble shots, and shots that are going to help you score. In other words, the short game. These techniques will also give you a good idea of your proficiency level across a variety of shots and give you realistic performance expectancies. If you are hitting 7 out of 10 bunker shots within 10 feet of the hole during your practice times, there's no reason to expect anything less than that during play. In fact, both during practice and play, I would like for you to see the ball land and roll into the hole before every shot. Use your practice success level, which may be 7 out of 10 bunker shots within 10 feet of the hole, as a post-swing expectancy evaluation. You should be satisfied with every shot within your practice success range. Always practice with a purpose and a specific goal. Set practice goals and keep a diary so you can follow your progress. Jackie Burke, former PGA Tour champion, once told me that he would not leave the practice green in the evening until he made 100 straight three-footers. If he missed one, he started over. He set balls in a circle around the hole. There's a different putt on every stroke. This is called a clock drill. Jackie said when it came time to making a three-footer under pressure, it was just another one of 100. If you start this drill, depending on your entering skill level, you might begin at 5 or 10 in a row and gradually build to a level that meets your time allocation for practice. Remember, the bigger the performance goal, the longer the time allocation. No matter what shot you practice, if you practice with a purpose and set goals, you'll be more confident when you have that shot during a round. Note, the Mind Under Par series, Setting Practice Goals for Golf, provides a comprehensive program for developing shot proficiency and building confidence. Another practice strategy to build confidence is to play from closer tees. If you're accustomed to playing from the regular men's tees, play the ladies' tees for a few rounds. If you usually play from the men's tees or the championship tees, play a few rounds from the men's regular tees. You will not only be playing a shorter course to build confidence, you will have different shots to the green than usual. Forget about what people think when you play from the closer tees. In fact, if you are concerned about what people think, play from the red tees and practice quieting your internal dialogue and becoming focused in the present. You can work on two goals at once, building confidence and setting aside thoughts of what others might be thinking. Perform for yourself and nobody else. Lastly, during play, rate each shot on a 1 to 10 scale. Record the 8, 9, and 10 shots on your scorecard. If you had a shot you judged to be 7 or less, don't record it. Review your 8, 9, and 10 rated shots at the end of each round. Think about and picture each shot. Feel and see the swing that produced that shot. Focusing only on your success will help you build confidence. The Mind Under Par scorecard presents a comprehensive summary, examples for building confidence, and practice strategies to recall good shots for future rounds. Generalization. Let's assume you practice swing changes on the range and have success. When you attempt to take those swing changes out to the course to play, your performance begins to deteriorate. Your thoughts go to the mechanics of your swing, and the deterioration is amplified. When you return to the range, you are able to perform well again. This state or situation of the range where learning originally occurred promotes the repeated good performance. This is called state-dependent learning. The original learning occurred in the state of the relaxed, non-demanding environment of the range. It's easily repeated when you return to the range. The range is relaxed, non-threatening, and provides no performance demands. You likely hit several shots in a row with the same club. Overall, arousal in the range is low. You've never had to perform your swing changes with an internal state of high arousal. You go to the course to play, and the range performance abandons you. Many players ask, why can't I hit on the course the way I hit on the range? The answer is, you don't practice the way you play. When you practice the way you play, you'll be able to repeat your range performance on the course in increasingly more competitive or stressful situations. This means hitting only one shot at a time with one club on the practice range. Go through your full routine on each shot and start to practice the way you play. Choose targets and practice deep diaphragmatic breathing and mindfulness between shots. With repeated practice the way you play, you'll be able to take the swing you make on the range to the course successfully. LPGA Tour player and U.S. Open champion Meg Mallon describes her practice strategies under the direction of PGA Tour instructor Mike McGettrick. The thing I've learned from Mike is that routine is such a big part of the shot. Every time I hit a shot on the range, I step back and line it up. I go through the same routine I go through on the golf course. Mallon also described how she gets a new shot to a point of confidence so she can take it into a tournament round. I love to go out on the course on practice holes and hit over and over again the shot I've been learning. This shows me I can do it on the golf course. Give yourself different lies on the range. Practice with a headwind and a tailwind. Compete with your friends hitting to a target on the range. Play a practice round and play two balls. Play your worst ball on each shot. That means if you hit your first shot to the green to within 10 feet of the pin, you must hit it within 10 feet to have at least that shot. Asian, Australian, and PGA Tour player Dennis Paulson says he plays the worst ball game frequently. He indicates that it's the best way to prepare for a tournament. He notes, you find yourself thinking a lot like you do during a tournament, and you begin your breathing and thought restructuring and working on staying focused on one shot at a time. A story is told about Sam Snead betting Doug Sanders $500 that he would play worst ball and not make more than a bogey on any one hole. Sam lasted three holes before he lost the bet. Now you enter a tournament. You've never used the new swing in an atmosphere of high internal arousal. You begin to notice remnants of your old swing surface again. Your swing tempo quickens. Why? The transfer of training from the range to casual play to tournament play is called generalization. This transfer of training occurs only through repeated exposure to high arousal states during play. Many teachers will encourage early repeated exposure to high arousal situation so there is habituation to the effects of the stressful situation. That is why many teachers advocate gambling on the course, no matter how small the bet. Repeated exposure during play to having something on the line provides a learning opportunity during various arousal states. Practicing one shot at a time while going through your full routine is the first step toward improved on-course performance. The next step is to play in the easiest performance situation you can and gradually increase the stressful conditions over time. Compile a list from easiest to most difficult playing conditions for you. For example, the easiest may be playing alone. Next easiest may be playing with players whose handicaps are higher than yours. Third, playing with friends who have the same handicap. Fourth, playing with players better than you. Fifth, playing in a tournament scramble format, best ball, and so on. Sixth, match play tournament, and seventh, stroke play tournament, for example, club, school, city, state, U.S. amateur, mini tour, Nike, PGA, and LPGA tours. Consider this list a ladder to climb, and each step a rung. Your starting level on this list may not be item number one. You will find plateaus in your performance at various rungs. It simply means you need to participate at that level longer. If the plateau is prolonged, it may be time to look at setting goals for practice that are performance-based. Every club champion has experienced plateaus on different rungs. Every PGA Tour player has experienced plateaus and periods of adaptation on the rungs of this ladder. Remember, the range is filled with scratch golfers. Take it from the range to the course. Establishing practice criteria that promote high arousal is another strategy. For example, I will leave the putting green only after I make 30 consecutive 3-foot putts. If I miss a putt, I'll start over. Or I will leave the range only after I hit 10 straight wedges within 5 feet of the flag. If I'm outside 5 feet on any one shot, I start over. You can imagine how much pressure and frustration you would begin to experience after missing your 28th putt or your 10th wedge shot. As you have success at each stage, you increase the criterion to 35, 40, 75, 100 putts, or 12, 15, 20, 30 wedge shots until you experience pressure. Range contests with other players can also add competition and pressure that is good practice exposure. This is why the experience of competition seasons a tour player or competitive amateur. The frequent state of intense competition provides an opportunity for learning, both mental and mechanical. After years of repeated experience in the state of competition, a player learns mental and mechanical strategies that hold up well under pressure. Situational confidence. Our confidence changes depending on the conditions of play, with whom we play, and how we perceive these conditions as related to our past success and experiences. When faced with situations in which we have performed well in the past, our confidence rises. Lanny Watkins was 5 shots off the lead going into the final round of the Greater Hartford Open, Sunday, August 2, 1992. In an interview prior to that round, Watkins, when asked if he thought he had a chance to win, responded, "Maybe if it got windy and I shot 65. He was paired with Billy Ray Brown, another good wind player. On the practice tee Sunday morning, the wind began to blow. Watkins turned to Billy Ray Brown and said, "Hey, we have a chance." Watkins shot 65 and won the tournament. On July 11, 1993, Watkins was tied for the lead following the third round at the PGA Tour Anheuser-Busch Golf Classic at Williamsburg, Virginia, after shooting a 64 on Saturday. The heat index was as high as 140 and a minimum of 115 during that weekend. Watkins was interviewed following the third round. His response to his lead on Saturday was a bit different from the year before. "There's one more day to go, still time to screw it up. Perhaps the conditions of the heat being in the lead, his evaluation of his performance, or just not wanting to sound too confident produced that response. However, it was a self-fulfilling prophecy." On Sunday, Watkins shot a 1-under par 70 to finish the tournament 3 shots behind the winner, Jim Gallagher Jr. Following the Sunday round, Watkins summarized his impressions of his play. "It was a bad day for me. I'm totally disgusted with the way I played." Different situations or conditions promote different degrees of confidence or lack thereof. The best players have the greatest number of conditions that promote confidence and the fewest number that create self-doubt. Those players who have the most mental toughness believe they can perform well regardless of what the conditions are or what their recent performance has been. The following are a few examples of conditions that will cue an attitude of confidence or one of self-doubt. Weather: wind, rain, sun, hot, cold. If you start around well or started poorly. Bogey or a series of bogeys. A birdie or a series of birdies. Someone else's poor play or their good play. A casual round versus practice round versus tournament round. Playing with good or better players. 1, 2, 3, 4, etc. 3-putt greens in a row. Club to be used, whether you have confidence. It might be a 1, 2, or 3 iron or driver or fairway wood. Water hazard, trees, sand, and so on between you and the target. 1 putt from outside 6 feet, 2 greens in a row. Make 4 3-footers in a row. Left to right putts, right to left putts. Fairway or greenside bunker shot. High score or low score on the last round you played. Hit good or bad shot the last time you played the same hole. Played well in the same tournament last year. Played poorly in the same tournament last year. playing your home course, hard or soft greens, consecutive bad shots, consecutive good shots, and then we would quantify that and add a number there. How many does it take before your confidence begins to change? If you hit poorly on the range before you play, or if you hit well on the range before you play, putt poorly on the practice green before you play, or putt well on the practice green before you play, and the list of situations that promote situational confidence or lack thereof goes on and on. Johnny Miller won the 1994 AT&T at Pebble Beach, making it his third time to win that title. He won in 1974, 1987, and then again in 1994. Miller had some interesting observations regarding his 1994 win. "I wasn't supposed to win. I'm retired. I'm a golf announcer. I don't play more than 25 rounds of golf a year. I don't practice. I don't know what it is, but something about this course makes me hit it good. I feel like I play young when I come to Pebble Beach." The best players will focus and capitalize on confidence-building events and situations and minimize their attention to problems, with the exception of practice to overcome deficits. During a 1992 interview, Fred Couples was relating the effects that comments from Tom Watson had on him. "When someone like Tom Watson says something good about you, it can have a big effect on you. He told me, 'You're a great player. Keep doing what you're doing and it'll happen.'" Nick Price won the 1992 PGA Championship at Bellerive Country Club in St. Louis. He made an interesting observation. "Tom Kite winning the Open at 42 helped me a lot. I figured when you're in your mid to late 30s, you'd better start winning. With older guys like Raymond Floyd winning, that gave me the confidence that there was still time left for me." Most people think that once an athlete in one sport experiences pressure, he won't have problems with pressure in other sports. Not so. This is true only if that athlete has had repeated exposure to pressure in both sports. Miami Dolphins quarterback Dan Marino was playing in a shootout with 9 PGA pros during the spring of 1992. In an interview with Golf World magazine, Marino said, "Yeah, I was nervous. The worst part was the tee shot. That's as hard as anything I've done. I was happy because I didn't hit nobody. This is the same person who played in the Super Bowl on national television in front of millions of people." Your comfort zone and your confidence zone are determined by you and your prior experiences in those situations and your perceptions. With repeated exposure to those conditions, Dan Marino would likely have little difficulty with what Sam Snead called first tee jitters. PGA Tour player Patrick Burke played his first major at the U.S. Open in Pebble Beach, California in 1992. "I met him on Thursday morning prior to the first round. I had never seen him so revved up internally. He said he had played a practice round and noted, as is customary for the U.S. Open, the roughs were high, the fairways were narrow, and the greens were quick. Patrick informed me that he had removed 2 of his wedges and replaced them with 1 wedge and a cleek, which is a 5-wood railer, so he could escape more easily from the deep rough. He had also changed his putter because of the quickness of the greens. The first round he struggled. It was painful to watch. In spite of the cleek, he still had problems with the rough. He shot 79 the first day, and his play was well below his capability. After the round, he remarked that his greatest problem was getting close to the pin, since he didn't use his normal wedges, which he knew well and with which he was confident. During dinner, we discussed the obvious, returning to the full set of clubs he usually played. The second day, with an eagle and 2 birdies, Patrick was 4-under after 9 holes. He brought it in even on the day after 2 double bogeys. He missed the cut, and the rest is history. This was an important lesson for Patrick. The situation of his first major affected his confidence in his ability to perform in U.S. Open conditions. His second day took care of all the doubts." Mental toughness. In 1988, Matt Biondi was a member of the U.S. Olympic swim team. Many predicted that Biondi would repeat Mark Spitz's feat of 7 gold medals. Biondi won a bronze and silver his first 2 events. Television announcers began to prepare the public for continued sub-gold performance. Onlookers didn't have expectations for gold in Biondi's subsequent events. Biondi responded with 5 consecutive gold medals. Why was Matt Biondi able to turn his performance around? Prior to the Olympics, Matt Biondi was given false feedback by his coach on the 100-yard butterfly. His actual time was 50.2 seconds. He was told his time was 51.7 seconds. Biondi was asked to rest and repeat the event again. The second time, he improved to 50 seconds flat. better than his actual first time. It is not surprising that Matt Biondi was able to come off bronze and silver medals and turn in a golden performance. When faced with negative feedback, he turned things up a notch, stayed focused, and performed better. Matt Biondi is mentally tough. Brad Faxon won over $1 million on the PGA Tour in 1996 to finish 8th on the money list, and he was ranked 24th in the world. 1996 PGA Tour statistics showed that Faxon was ranked 170th in average driving distance, 142nd in total fairways hit, 134th in greens and regulation, and first in putting with an average of 1.709 putts per hole. He played in 22 tournaments and made 22 cuts. His peers will tell you that he scores well with these statistics for two reasons. The first reason is obvious. When you can putt like Brad Faxon, you can score. Secondly, they will tell you that Brad Faxon can hit the ball 100 yards offline and you would never know he had hit a bad shot. He simply finds his ball and his next target. The key to scoring well is to have a strong short game and the mental toughness to negate a loss of confidence with poor play. The next time you start to miss fairways and greens or hit the ball offline, think about Brad Faxon. Be mentally tough and a good internal caddy. European and PGA Tour player David Faraday made an interesting observation about the importance of how you handle adversity. He said, "It's not what happens to you that matters in the long run. It's your attitude. That's what determines how you cope with the next experience that comes along. Quite often, it's how you deal with failure that determines how you achieve success. The mental process is like building a muscle. It's not letting your whole framework of thinking fall down around you. It's having the resolve and mental toughness to take it on the chin. Keep your head up and feel good about yourself for having done that. You can either feel bad because you failed or good because of your positive reactions to it. That will give you the armor to cope with it the next time." Also recall what Sam Snead said about giving up. In tossing in your cards after a bad beginning, you also undermine your whole game. Because to quit between tea and green is more habit-forming than drinking a highball before breakfast. We think in pictures. If you are confident and mentally tough, you will see success. If you are fearful, don't believe you are capable, or interpret poor performance as not having it today, you will give up and see failure. The next chapter describes the role these pictures have on performance.
This is the end of this cassette. Please proceed to the next cassette.